Yeah, hi, this is Detlef here of Wake News Radio, Wake News TV from Switzerland in our United We Strike radio marathon. Yeah, I'm very glad to have finished the first hour in German from our United We Strike radio marathon. And we are now in the English-speaking part, and I'm welcoming our guest, Mark Anderson. Mark Anderson is well-known to everybody who's active. So we may not talk too much about your bio, Mark, but you're there. Maybe you give us a little summary of what you've done.
Well, I'm a former mainstream journalist that got involved in the deeper stories. Must have been some 15 years ago. And I started working for American Free Press in 2006, 2007. And that's where I met Jim Tucker, the former late great Bilderberg hound. And he trained me in the ways of Bilderberg pretty well, and I'm carrying on his tradition. And this year, of course, Bilderberg met in Chantilly, Virginia again, where they've met three times before, and that was June 1 through 4, so that just wound up just outside of Washington, D.C. And it's an interesting year in that it's their first time they've met with a Donald Trump presidency, the first time the White House has ever had four people at a Bilderberg meeting, and it's the first time in a long time that two sitting senators, not one but two, have been at Bilderberg. So some very notable things this year.
So it is a very important meeting. Although the mainstream press, or Matrix Press, as I say this, Matrix Media, don't really let us believe that it is an important meeting. So what are your impressions on what the mainstream is reporting on this Bilderberger meeting? Did they report about it at all?
Well, the only mainstream quote unquote that reported on it is Charlie Skelton of The Guardian. He's a regular at Bilderberg, so that's not a surprise. I guess The Guardian's considered mainstream, although it's not American. I called a number of media, even those that covered Bilderberg last year and broke their silence, such as the Kansas City Star and the Post and Courier in South Carolina. One, the Post and Courier, was because their Senator Lindsey Graham, who went to Bilderberg last year in Dresden, Germany, went again this year in Virginia. And I thought, well, surely they'd be writing a story about him again because they wrote about it last year. Well, the Post and Courier went silent again. The Kansas City Star, which had picked on Lindsey Graham for going to Bilderberg last year in Germany, they too apparently went silent. And a number of calls were made to the senator's offices, to the Bilderberg Hotel, trying to get a press conference, and to other press outlets. Absolute total slam the door silence this year in terms of American media. It's the worst I've seen since I helped start covering Bilderberg starting in 2010 when Jim Tucker was still with me in Spain. So the press, of course, here has been obsessed with this Comey thing, which is getting to the point of pure hilarity, purely comical nonsense. Very little of any pertinence there. And so the press has been obsessed with that primarily, and that totally overshadowed Bilderberg, as did Trump's announcement that he was pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. That happened right during Bilderberg, right on the eve of it. So I'm not making excuses for the press, but these are the things they focused on while they totally slammed the door on Bilderberg this year, particularly American media. So the alternative media, including myself, who was out there, we really had our work cut out for us, and we did our best to outline what's important. These officials that were there that I mentioned, the other sitting senator is Tom Cotton of Arkansas, a fellow Republican, neoconservative, pro-war Republican with Lindsey Graham there. And we really did everything we could. We followed them to the airport as they left. We questioned them up close. Members of the Bilderberg group, attendees, including a new attendee that Press for Truth interviewed as he was leaving. He's an Italian journalist. I didn't get his name quite yet. But he, of course, was one of a record number of reporters, some 13 or 14 of them who were there this year, who, of course, as you know, go in and participate, but have to refrain from reporting. The rule is if they want to get inside, they can't report on any of it. And this Italian gentleman we caught at Dulles Airport leaving was one of them. usually there's three or four journalists there, your familiar ones, you know, like Martin Wolf, the Financial Times, and Micklethwaite, who's with Bloomberg News. But instead of two or three of them, they had some 14 of them. So the press is not only not reporting, they're becoming more in tune with becoming Bilderberg participants. So it's really getting bad in the media realm.
Yeah. Well, that's that is really a pity. But still, I mean, there were some journalists at Bilderberg from new or alternative media. I think InfoWars used to report a lot about Bilderberg as well. It looked they didn't do this this time. Did you meet any of them?
Yes, they had a correspondent out there at least much of the time. I was going back and forth between the hotel writing and back out to the site and getting around trying to put some copies of American Free Press's front page on Bilderberg in some area venues to promote our alternative reporting and to get the word out to the general population, because that's part of why we go there, is to get more of the general population aware of Bilderberg, whether the mainstream press is reporting or not. InfoWars had a presence there, although it was very, very pro-Donald Trump, whereas American Free Press and most other media that go out there of an alternative sort are more neutral, sometimes maybe overly critical of Trump, but we try to maintain some neutrality and some objectivity, because as many of us know, Donald Trump is a mixed bag. Some things look good, some things don't look so good, and it's a little hard to sort out. But InfoWars seemed to be all one-sided toward Donald Trump. But it's a hard read because, as I said, the White House had four people, the Commerce Secretary, two people out of the National Security Council, which includes the National Security Advisor, McMaster, and then another official named Christopher Liddell, who's originally from New Zealand. He's a strategic advisor. But besides McMaster, the other national security official there was Nadia Shadlo, who's written papers and is known best for writing about hybrid warfare. And she was there to give what are seen as her valuable reports on dealing with the so-called Russian menace, this thing that they're trying to pin on Trump, saying that he's been colluding with Russia, and so if his officials or his campaign people and all this stuff that the media keeps harping on. And Nadia Shadlo's papers, I read into them a bit, and they're all about trying to decipher what Russia is doing, and it definitely keeps Russia and its allies, Syria and Iran, in the framework of an enemy of the West, or certainly an untrustworthy nation state in all three cases. But Nadia Shadlo's expertise was brought there to say that all these different things the Russian government does might look like separate events, but they're part of a grand master plan, more or less, against the West by Vladimir Putin, whether it's cyber attacks allegedly by Russia against the U.S., or whether it's military maneuvers or political overtures or economic things. She's trying to say it all fits together in one larger Russian scheme. And of course, this fits into the Bilderberg narrative of playing countries off one another and having to keep a state of fear going, having to keep the world enveloped in that state of fear so they can push forward their economic and political agendas toward global consolidation. You know, one world limited, almost as if they're trying to create one large holding company for all the different corporations of the world, which is also the view of Daniel Eschelin, who recently made a movie about Bilderberg. I'll make that footnote. But these are just some of many things. And then the other thing is the Global Cities movement, which is huge. But these are the things that I've been piecing together through inside and outside sources.
Yeah. Well, this is quite interesting. And I was following one of your interviews where you explained to the audience that big cities have sort of have set up a corporation amongst each other worldwide. So they basically do their own politics now on a worldwide scale, and they don't care about what the nation, the so-called nation, which we all know is not a nation, it's all corporations as well. They don't care about what a leader of a nation wants or what the laws are or so forth. Is that sort of a new thing which has appeared, or is this already an ongoing practice?
It's fairly ongoing. It really took root 2 or 3 years ago stateside at the busiest World Affairs Council in the United States, among some 60 or at least 60 or 70 of them. There may be more. A lot of them fall under the umbrella of the World Affairs Council of America, or WACA. And World Affairs Council is kind of like mini Chicago on mini Council on Foreign Relations outlets, much like Chatham House in England, which is the Royal Institute of International Affairs. The U.S. actually has a network of these World Affairs Councils that are like branch offices of the CFR and Chatham House. It's an amazing thing that most people don't even realize. And the Chicago World Affairs Council is the one in the U.S. that's pushing the hardest, although they all are, at global cities. And yes, what you said is right. And this was accentuated by the fact that coming right out of Bilderberg, longtime Bilderberg attendee Martin Wolf of the Financial Times went to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, Global Cities in symposium, which just concluded June 7, 8, and 9 at the Chicago Art Institute downtown. And the Financial Times not only sent Martin Wolf there, Martin Wolf, longtime Bilderberger, actually had the Financial Times name out there as the co-sponsor of this thing. So the Financial Times, which comes out of the City of London, the well-heeled financial center, Rothschild-connected financial center, the square mile in England, not the real City of London that we think about, but the City of London, the financial center, a separate entity. Here they send someone representing their paper, Financial Times. They co-sponsor this Chicago event. And the head of the Chicago group, who's a former ambassador to NATO, his name is Ivo Dalder, he gets up and says right out of the starting gate that cities don't have to take orders from their nations anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly
literally. Yeah. That's literally what he said. And this... These well-heeled people somehow don't see this as subversive. If you and I were saying this, they would accuse us of being secessionists. But they're in effect doing a kind of corporate secession under this guise of, well, we need to bigger cities and put in, we need to build our cities, excuse me, and put in all this spiffy internet and all this fantastic infrastructure, and some of that might be good. Maybe they'll build some pleasant cities. Maybe the cities will be, you know, less ridden with crime. Maybe the cities will be cleaner. I'm not saying there's no benefits coming out of this. The problem is their motivation, their end goal, their ends and their means, and therein lies the problem with this notion that the city-states can go it alone, networking together in a global grid with the help of the World Parliament of Mayors, and which is a real organization, and operate together as if they're not really even part of the nations they inhabit, and determine their own climate change policy, determine their own immigration policies, which would mean they'd want to be sanctuary cities and defy the border laws of the nations they're in, and define their own probably gun laws, I suspect, that you'd have to check your gun at the door if you're a legal gun carrier like many in the United States. I suspect they would crack down on individual firearm ownership in a big way. That I still have to confirm. And that'd be an interesting question for Switzerland too. But this is what's coming. And Bilderberg actually dealt with this in their Denmark meeting in 2014 by the inclusion of the Atlanta, Georgia mayor, the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia being there under the global cities rubric, and then also a Brookings Institution fellow, who was there at that Denmark meeting also, as my inside sources told me, to talk about global cities. So this is what they're after in their private government that Bilderberg is known about. You know, they're more or less a presidium for private government to network and gather ideas and kind of chart the course and be kind of a planning commission. So the corporations and banks and their fellow travelers can construct a governance system all their own. And that's ultimately what Bilderberg and its satellites are all about.
Right. And, you know, we were all very, astounded when we listened to the London mayor, Sadiq Khan, who is a Muslim, as well. Yes. Said terrorism is just part and parcel of living in a big city. Can you imagine? I mean, this is incredible. I mean, we had these three manufactured terror attacks here in London recently, or in England recently, in UK recently, two in London and one in Manchester. So, I mean, we have to get used to terrorism now.
Well, I thought that these global cities that they're building would be virtually free of all germs and viruses, and there wouldn't be a single particle of pollutants, and everything would be just completely utopian. I guess we misunderstood that these guys can't seem to control everything, and the perfection that they keep implying that these global cities would have, that these things would be, a sight to behold, a perfection of social and technological creation, cities without crime, cities without, any significant problems. But yet we see these big cities still being racked by terrorism. Although you're right, the circumstances surrounding these terror attacks simply do not add up. Are we to believe that, okay, I'm an ISIS guy, and now I've decided that even though in Syria somehow I got a hold of American-made tanks and American-made weapons in some cases, and we've got perfect Toyota Jeeps all looking like they're brand new, and somehow we keep getting all the fuel and all our supply lines never seem to be interrupted, and we've got sophisticated weaponry, but the best we can do is run people over with a car and then hop out of the car and stab them with knives, like in some cases, we're to believe 100% that that's what happened. The very idea that these stories are literally true in the way we're being told is pretty absurd. Maybe something did happen, yes, and maybe people got killed. I won't necessarily write that off, but the particular facts just in many cases don't add up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but let's come back to the Bilderberg meeting. I mean, Trump people were there. What are you expecting personally from the development in the U.S.? Will Trump succeed? I mean, will he be able to put through his program, or will he be sort of, I don't know, will he has to, there's a lot of talk about him getting loss of his power. So what are your impressions?
Right now, it's a tough call. One of the videos I did at Bilderberg was, "Will the real Donald Trump please stand up?" That line was recited in one of the videos. I believe it's in the one with Dan Dix of Press for Truth.
Right.
And, Donald Trump, his White House sends four people to Bilderberg. That sets something of a record in and of itself. You know, is Bilderberg going to tell him what to do, quote unquote, or is he going to kind of read them the riot act? I understand the Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross was there right during some very sensitive NAFTA related negotiations, and that has to do with the sugar trust, because the concern is Mexican sugar growers are dumping sugar on the U.S. market and undercutting our sugar growers. So Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, was at Bilderberg June 1 through 4, and according to my sources, he had to wrap up these sugar talks by June 5. So how could he have been at Bilderberg without talking about this? Because otherwise he would have had no time to be there, and he would have had to be somewhere else doing these negotiations. So it stands to reason, and my sources tell me, that he was there to discuss NAFTA. That could be where Bilderberg is trying to keep the White House from pulling out of NAFTA. That's how I read it based on my inside sources, because Trump already pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He already pulled out of the Paris Accord. Although we need details on both of those, just like Brexit, it seems like the UK is getting out of the European Union, and yet it seems like there's strings attached that's preventing a full departure. So we got to be very careful. Nevertheless, if Trump were to pull out of NAFTA, that would be another strike against the Bilderberg Group, just like the TPP was, and just like pulling out of the Paris Accord. So that would suggest that Trump is a little against Bilderberg in some respects, and maybe sent some of his people there to kind of get the lowdown on Bilderberg, and maybe to put the White House's priorities right front and center. and let Bilderberg know about that. On the other hand, in the days and weeks ahead, we'll get a lot better read. But certainly, if Trump were a friend of the internationalists, it seems like he wouldn't be being beat up all the time by the media. Although I realize sometimes there's shadow boxing and, you know, theater going on that's not real, things like that. But it seems like the media is so anti-Trump without taking an objective look at Trump. You know, here's where he does good, here's where he does not so good. You know, it's pretty much all bad except for Fox News. They're a little bit more the other way. But with the media being this anti-Trump, I can't help but think that Trump is at least mostly on the wrong side of Bilderberg. But, you know, that's just a preliminary thing. We have to look at the developments over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we are unfortunately heading towards the end of our interview. We've got 4 minutes or something. So this question might be a little bit too much to be answered. But, you know, we are looking at the U.S. Also from a European view. Mm-hmm. It's a country which is in the middle of sort of a revolution, because there are two sides, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, if you wish, who are fighting extremely against each other. Now, could this develop into such a thing as a revolution? What is your personal view?
Oh, you mean would it actually result in street violence and things of that nature? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, maybe there will be coming something like that, yeah, with the Patriots.
Well, you know, that almost seemed more likely right around the time of the inauguration, which I happened to attend and cover for American Free Press, and the Soros-backed, Soros-funded black shirts, I'll call them, were torching limousines and breaking out front windows in Washington, D.C., near the White House, probably within a few blocks, and probably about a mile and a half from Capitol Hill. And it seemed almost worse then. I think things have cooled since then, but I think they're heating back up. It's just a question of whether it would come to that. But I think the black shirts and George Soros and related funding is out there to try and bring that on, because it's not the pro-Trump people, whatever their faults or misconceptions about Trump and whatever one might think about Trump. We strive to be very, very objective for the news outlets I work for. But whatever one might think of him, the pro-Trump people are not resorting to violence that I know of in any significant way, if they are at all. It's all coming from the left. So my read on it is George Soros, among others, he's not always the only boogeyman, is trying to stir the pot and try to create that thing. But if the pro-Trump people have any say, I don't think they would resort to that other than maybe fistfights or minor skirmishes. You know, that might happen.
Yeah. Well, we will be interested also in, you know, in the developments of what is coming off of the Bilderberger meeting. Yes. The one in Austria brought us all the migrants, the migrant wave. So that was quite significant. But let's see what comes off this one. Because there was also a CERN member, the chief director of CERN here in Geneva in Switzerland was present. So that was also very interesting.
Yes, it was. I don't have a lot of intel on that. Jason Burmes, a sometimes Bilderberg journalist, has commented on it online for We Are Change. Right. People can find some of his comments there. That's something I'm looking into because it's new to me in terms of my research. But it's very interesting and notable. That's true.
Now, could you give us your website again, how people can reach you and learn about what you're doing?
Yeah, you can go to AmericanFreePress.net. I also have a blog at TheTruthHound.com. That's www.TheTruthHound.com. And I make occasional appearances on UKColumn.org and some material on 21stCenturyWire.com. Those are the main ones, roughly in that order.
So if you would give us a last thought about what we can do in order to prevent tyranny brought to us by Bilderberger and company.
Boy, that's hard in the time we have left.
2 minutes.
Yeah, well, the since it's only 2 minutes, it always comes back to the monetary system. I would encourage listeners to look up something called social credit. It's a monetary reform, not to be confused with something that China did. I don't even know what that is. But look up Clifford Douglas and the social credit movement and how a particular manner of monetary reform would largely disarm and disengage this global tyranny, because the main thing they have over the general population is the ability to privately create money at interest, where every dollar or unit born is debt, and that debt is used as a leverage tool to get the nations to march in unison, if you will, and militarize and fight each other, and the nations are played off each other, because without a military involvement, without a global commitment of huge amounts of resources, the debt-based money system can't function. That war is one of the only things that gives it the infusion of fuel, you might say, to keep it going. Otherwise, it would fall by its own weight. So we not only have to end the Federal Reserve, as some Americans say, and even some Europeans, we have to know what to replace it with. And there's, lastly, I'll end with this quote. Buckminster Fuller once said, you don't fight the system head on, you create an alternative system and make the old system obsolete. And that's kind of an outlook that might help. So people can look up things like that and check out a website called socred.org. That's SOCRED.org. That's another one, socred.org. And read some alternative views like that. These are things that are sort of off the beaten path, and I think people will find them refreshing.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. It was wonderful to have you here in our show today on our United Strike Radio Marathon, June 10th, 2017. And we're looking forward to having you back.
So I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll maybe fairly soon we'll talk off air. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye. And I'm switching to some music, and then we'll get to the next section with our next guest. Right. Thank you.
You're listening to UnitedWeStrike.com Radio. Don't buy, don't comply. Ask why. UnitedWeStrike.com Radio.
Up, up in the sky, there they go again. The chemtrail planes are flying high. They don't want you to know, so they lie and deny the truth. I wonder who they think they are, laying down white lines to spoil the blue. I wonder why, I wonder how people can doubt what they see in plain view. Up, up in the sky, there they go again.
The sky again.
The chemtrail planes, they're flying high, but they don't want you to know, so they lie and deny the truth. They say it's not happening, it can't be. Why would the government do that to you and me? That what you and I see is illusion, is madness, is conspiracy. They say it's just ice, they only want to talk nice. Can't they see that the atmosphere's changed by the climate change brought by the planes they've arranged? Up, up in the sky, there they go again.
Again.
The chemtrail planes are flying high, but they don't want you to know. So they lie and deny the truth. Plainly see that the skies are strewn with whitish goo made of barium, strontium, biologicals too, emitting fibers that grow inside of you, emitted from planes arcing high while the people below struggle to survive, while the people below breathe, gasp, and die.